Okay, the subject of this next part of the Dhamma Enrichment Camp for the Modern Age is the busy person's method of easy meditation. But I'll just get people started. I'll just answer these two questions first of all, because they probably came from the last session. Dear Ajahn Brahm, thank you for your answer. I haven't given it yet. Isn't that wonderful gratitude? They thank me no matter what I answer. How can a business owner be successful in their business without being pushy or a hard sell, even though they are looking for success and confident? I find it tiring to constantly worrying about new business. How can I be more at peace knowing business will come in? Is it possible to be Buddhist in my business practice without being desperate? Yeah, of course it is. I am the CEO of a big monk factory in Perth. I've got the franchise for Theravada Buddhism in Western Australia, and I've expanded my franchise to many other outlets throughout the world. So I'm a big businessman. I'm in the monk business. But you don't need to be pushy or hard sell. If you've got a good product, then people will come to you. And that's my sort of motto. Develop your product, and then usually word of mouth will get around, and you'll be very successful. And many executives actually tell me that the secret of business success is actually their contacts. Being able to work with other people, make those contacts, being kind, being trustworthy, and getting on with people. It's those contacts and networking, that's what really brings you success in business. You know, when you need a product, when you need to sell it somewhere, getting those contacts, those people you know, and that's how you get success in business. And if you're pushy, what happens when you push someone? You push them off. In other words, you're not friends anymore. Anyone who's pushy, you shouldn't be pushy, you should be bringy, not pushy. Bring people towards you. In other words, so attract people, be kind, be nice. And then, actually, people come to you. So you don't need to be pushy. And modern business practice is to know the most important part of your company actually is not your product, it's the people. The most important part of a business is the people who work for you. And if you really value your major asset, which is people, and this is not just Buddhism, this is what I was hearing in London's big HR conference, PricewaterhouseCoopers, British Airways, who else was there? Heaps of other big companies, I forget now. And they were all saying the same thing. Or that the people, this is what we really value. And if you cultivate the people, cultivate, you know, the people working for you and your business contacts, then your business will get very, very successful. Because that is your main asset. You know, people, we've got plenty of products, and people need things in this world. It's actually getting these products out, and the only way you can do that is through people. So if you value the people in your business, in your company, your business will go very, very well. In other words, be a good Buddhist. And if you're a good Buddhist, your Buddhist business is going up and up and up. So I think we should have a stock market just for Buddhist businesses. Now the so what is the stock market in Malaysia called? Okay, can we start the Buddhist stock market, the Buddhist index, the Buddhist bourse company, the BBC? Because they're only Buddhist stocks, and we know because of the Buddhist stocks they'll go up, 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 up. They'll rise all the way to Nirvana. Yes, they might do too. But anyway, no, the modern business people, there's a lot of big business people actually becoming Buddhists. There's one person I know, his name is John Akehurst. He was the CEO of Woodside Petroleum. Woodside is one of the big mining companies, got huge amounts of energy, oil and gas leases over in the northwest shelf of Western Australia, exporting billions of dollars of liquefied gas over to China and other countries. And this CEO of this big company, he wrote this article that he found there was problems up in the boardroom. And he found that what the problem was him. He called himself a pain in the ass. I'm just quoting him. And he said that he decided to do something about it. You know what he did? He learnt meditation and became a Buddhist. And now he's resigned from actually Woodside. He's now a big gas company, Alinta Gas, one of the big energy providers of Western Australia. So these are big CEOs who are learning some Dhamma, practicing meditation because it works. And they can get a much better business and become more successful. So the modern trend in the West is for CEOs to meditate and become Buddhists. So, here in Malaysia, you are ahead of the game. You go first and the West follows. So it's actually, you can be a good business owner, but don't be too pushy. You've got to be strong, assertive, but don't forget the personal values and contacts you have with your friends and colleagues and business associates. That networking you find is the most important for business success. Next question. If we have enough of virtue, we're all bad people and spirits stay away from us. And when you have lots and lots of virtue, should I say this? All the ghosts come to you to get your merits. I don't want to be good anymore, said people. No, because when you actually, the truth of the matter is, when you are virtuous, bad people, bad spirits, they can't come close. This is one of the stories I tell. There was a Thai girl many years ago in our monastery in Perth. Very good Thai Buddhist, one of the chief supporters, would always be there to help, always bringing food for the monks. And she had her father died, had a mother left over in Thailand. And she thought, mother's alone. No, it's not right, no filial piety, to have my mother living in Thailand while I'm living in Australia. So she got her mother a visa, paid an air ticket, and brought her mother over to stay with her and her children. So her mother was staying, elderly mother, staying in Perth for many years. But eventually she got sick. Now she was an old lady. And this girl, her name was Ratana, this girl Ratana thought, I wonder if my mother's going to survive this illness. She wanted to know. So she went to a medium, one of these spirit doctors in Perth, and said, look, I want to know if my mother's going to survive this current illness she has. She's in hospital right now. So the medium said, sure, I can find that out for you. It costs $20, $20. So she gave her the $20, and this medium went into a trance. Well, first of all, she had to know what hospital, what ward, and what room, because you're going to leave her body and check out this old lady. So they gave her the name of the hospital, the ward number, the room number, and this spirit doctor went into a trance for about 20 minutes. And when she came out of the trance afterwards, she gave the $20 back to this Thai girl. She said, why are you giving it back? He said, look, I tried. I found the hospital, I found the ward, I found the room, but I just could not get into the room. He said, your mother was strange, I'd never seen this before. She had a force field around it, her, and I just could not penetrate it to find out whether she was going to survive this illness or not. That's why I couldn't do it, so I'm giving your $20 back. But by the way, I never seen anything like that. Who is your mother, anyway? And this girl, this Thai girl, said, oh, my mother's a Buddhist nun. She's been like a mayor chief for the last 25 years. And the medium took the $20 back. You should have told me beforehand. People like me can't get close to people like that. And that was a true story of like a medium, a spirit doctor, who actually left the body like a ghost will do, like a spirit could do, but could not get close to a person of such strong virtue. And what was interesting is the way she felt when she tried to approach this old Thai Buddhist nun was a force field protecting her around. And that's actually what spirits will feel. If you're a very, very good, kind person, they'll feel that force field, and they won't be able to come in without your permission. You can keep them out if you want to. But if you've got compassion, you say, come in, it's all right, come on. And you can share some of your goodness with them. But the point is that you have a bit more control when you've got goodness and kindness. And also bad people. Bad people and evil people, they just can't get close to you. I remember this other fellow. He's from Singapore. And, you know, I blessed him with some holy water that day, and I gave him the precepts. And he went to a party that night. He didn't drink alcohol, but when he went to the party, there was this man, I think another Chinese man, he was into black magic. You know, like black magic, and it's a very bad thing to get into. But as soon as this man, Victor his name was, not Victor Wee, another Victor, as soon as this Victor came into the room, this black magician got really tense and looked at him and said, "I've got to get out. I can't stay in the same room with someone like you." Simply because he had been blessed that very day. And that actually protected him. And this black magician, who was obviously into some very bad practices, just could not stay even in the same room. And those are two examples I have had from my own experience, that when you do keep precepts, you are very, very strong and very protected. So that's what actually happens. So if you keep precepts, you've got no worries at all. You are much stronger than other people. Maybe the other story, which is a funny story, that I was staying with my mother, looking after her a few years ago, and it came the time when it was time for my lunch. My mother was cooking lunch. So I was just, you know, staying in the room, looking after some things. And there was a knock on the door of my mother's apartment. So I thought, "Mum, you carry on cooking, because that's more important." Because I like my mother's cooking. I'll answer the door. So I went to the door, you know, in my monk's robes. And when I answered the door, there was a lady on the other side, and she said that she was a gypsy, and she was selling gypsy trinkets. "Do you want to buy, like, a piece of heather?" And I was very polite. I said, "No, thank you." I was about to go, and she said, "If you don't buy this, I will put a gypsy curse on you." That was their marketing trick. And I stood up and I said, "Can you not see? I am a Buddhist monk. My curses are much stronger than yours." I was being cheeky. And this poor lady, her face went white. She turned around, she ran away. I know I shouldn't have done that. But it was a good fun. Of course, there's no such thing as Buddhist curses, but she didn't know that. No, it was that. It was a skillful means. It was true that, you know, that bad people, they can't handle, like, Buddhist monks and nuns, because we've got far too much power, and we're just not scared of things. That's why they can't do anything. Anyway, the busy person's method of meditation. Now, as Buddhists, everybody likes to meditate, but sometimes they just can't find the time. Or if they do find the time, they go thinking about all the sorts of stuff they shouldn't think of. Or if they stop their thinking, they fall asleep, and they think, "Oh, it's just so hard to meditate. How can ever I meditate?" And so a lot of times people give up, and they don't even try to meditate. And that way, they miss out one of the beautiful, wonderful assets of Buddhism, the skillful ways of meditating and bringing peace and happiness and relaxation to your body and mind. Not only is it a very, very pleasant thing to be able to do, but it's also so good for your health and well-being, even for your marriages and for your families. Even a couple of days ago when I was teaching in Perth, I told this story that many years ago when I taught at that group, a woman came after the meditation session and confessed that she never wanted to come to meditation that evening. She'd just come home from work, a very busy day. She was so tired she had to make the dinner for her husband and kids. She just wanted just to sit down and relax. But her children said, "Mummy, are you going to meditation?" "No, I don't feel like it, I'm tired." "Mummy, you should go to meditation." "No, I don't want to go." "Mummy, go to meditation." "Why?" said Mummy to her kids. "Because you're a much nicer mummy when you come back from meditation." When I told that sort of last Tuesday, you know, this lady came up afterwards and said, "Look, absolutely true. That happened to me that evening. I never wanted to come to meditation. My kids said, "Mummy, go." But it's true, the kids know you're a much nicer mummy and a much nicer daddy once you've been to meditation. And so it's really important for you, and it's wonderful to be able to do that. It's best for your kids, for your husband, for your wife, for everybody when you learn that. Not good for your mistress. No, it doesn't work for that, because it makes you really guilty, and so you should be. But it's very, very good for your health, emotional, and everything else, which is why it's just so popular over in the West. But sometimes the busy people, they meditate busily, and that's not meditation. So busy people have to understand what busyness is, and when they're sitting down with their eyes closed, stop being busy, but learn how to really relax. And this experience happened just last October, because I was in a meditation conference over in Sydney, and this professor from Stanford, he'd been investigating meditation, because there's huge numbers of courses now in Oxford, in Stanford, in Princeton, in Harvard, where you can actually study meditation. You can get a PhD in it, a doctor of samadhi. You can. And there's so much research being done these days. And he was telling me that they did this experiment, all paid for by the university. They got two groups of students, split them in half. They had to have the control group as well as the meditators. So they had people meditating for a whole day, while the other group, as a control, they sent them at the university's expense to a resort to spend the day in a spa by the pool, relaxing. It's not bad, isn't it, being paid just to relax? But he wanted to find out afterwards, with doing things like MRI scans and sort of questionnaires, which group relaxed the most, the people meditating or the people who went to the spa. And it's very, very clear that afterwards, the people who went to the spa were far more relaxed. Very embarrassing. But the reason was the sort of meditation they were doing. And many of you have known different types of meditation. It's a very fierce meditation, a very strict meditation, which you do get more tense afterwards. Now, that's not the meditation for busy people. So if you're a busy person, you don't want to do a meditation which makes you even more stressed out than when you began. Otherwise, it's much better you go to spa instead. That's why that every year, I think we've got some brochures out, every year that the group in Singapore have organized, they call it executive retreat. They do that because it's aimed at very busy people. And we do it in a resort in Khao Lak in Thailand. We did it last year as an experiment. Not 8 precepts, 5 precepts. That's enough for you guys. You're not monks or nuns. 5 precepts is good enough if you can actually give up your alcohol or your wine and other things and tell the truth. If every Buddhist kept 5 precepts, oh, my life would be much easier. So it's a 5-precept retreat. If people want to keep 8 precepts, they can do a bit extra. But also you have what we call Nobel silence in these retreats. You know what Nobel silence means? No bells. That's right, no bell silence. Because that's the last thing you want in a retreat when you're trying to relax. Have a bell, get up bell, a bell to sit down again, a bell to go to lunch, a bell to finish lunch. Gee, it's just like being in prison again, or at school. So there's no bells. So people can get up whenever they want. And it's true. You can just go and have a breakfast. Not sort of like lunch boxes, but a big spread or whatever you want. And then afterwards, a little bit of a talk, a little bit of a meditation. And then have lunch. Go and walk by the beach, swim in the pool. Swimming meditation, we call it. Then afterwards, a bit more meditation, a talk. Have your evening dinner. Come back again. more meditation, a little bit of a talk. You can see how gentle that is. And many people who've never meditated for the first time think, wow, this is great, I don't need to feel afraid. Because many people are like that. They hear meditation, they think meditation is getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, only eating 2 meals a day, sleeping next to someone who snores all night, and having to deal with achy arms, achy legs, achy backs, and just having pain, and also having to pay for that as well. And sometimes you think, is that really the best way of introducing modern people to meditation? A few people will do that. Now these are usually the young ones who have got fit and healthy, got a bit of time and got some energy. But for many people who do that type of meditation, we have to get up early and everything is structured and it's very, very austere. Many people like that, they just will not go because they're afraid of the physical discomfort. So making it a little bit soft and easy gets people in the first time. And it also, the most important thing, is it teaches people the importance of relaxation if you're going to meditate. And how to be calm and peaceful, relax the body first, and then you might be able to relax your mind. But bodily relaxation comes first. When the body's at ease, then the mind can be still. Now what actually happened in the last retreat, and what will certainly happen this time as well, you tell me you don't have to get up until 7 o'clock and just get out of bed for breakfast, or get room service if you want to. And you can come in for a little bit of meditation here, a little bit of meditation there. Because there's no pressure on people, a lot of people really relax, and for the first time they understand what meditation is all about. They get some peace in their meditation. And then what happens next is, because they're enjoying it, they want a bit more. So they get up earlier and they come completely voluntarily before breakfast to the meditation. And they stay there longer, not because they're forced to, but because they like to. And little by little, many people say, what do I want to eat for in the afternoon? I'm just having too much of a time. Maybe have a cup of tea like the monks. They're not forced to keep 8 precepts. They do it because they want to. And this takes all the force and the pressure off the meditation. And it becomes this wonderful natural progress into more and more peace and stillness. So understanding the psychology of the mind, when you make it easy, people don't become lazy. They start to rise up to a very, very wonderful meditation schedule without any force imposed upon them at all. So they get the peace, they put in the hours without any stress. And this is the most important part of meditation, especially for busy people. Because you're busy, you have enough stress already. You're working hard, you struggle just to get through the day, and you go on a retreat, and if it's a struggle again, wow, you're never going to go again on a meditation retreat. That's why in most meditation retreats, many of you have been on retreats before, when do they take the group photograph on a retreat? At the end. You know why they take the group photograph at the end? Because that's the only time when people are smiling and happy. Because they're about to go home. If you took the photograph in the middle of the retreat, then you could actually see what people are up to. Grimacing. That is important to learn that meditation is the art of peace and happiness. And when you know that's what the purpose of meditation is, then you understand why it's so important for busy people. Because it's teaching you how to relax. How to get a bit of peace and ease in your body and in your mind. Busy people are the ones who need to know how to relax the most. Because you're working your body so hard, you need to be very efficient in the short time you have to really relax and become at peace. If you know how to do that, it's amazing what you can do to relax the body and to relax the mind. So recently, there are four such busy people. If you just tell them just to go and watch the breath, they just can't do it. They either look at their breath with force as if they're trying to work out a contract. Come on, apply yourself. Or they start watching it and because they're so tired they completely fall asleep. There's a trouble. There's the two big problems for busy people, the wandering mind or the sort of the dull mind. And it's of those two, the wandering mind is much worse. At least if you're dull, you're getting a bit of rest. Maybe you're not there to enjoy it, but at least, you know, your brain is shutting down for a bit. But the wandering mind, those people who think, they're the biggest problem. And I think that's probably you. Can't stop thinking. Can't stop worrying. Can't stop. And when you look, think of, you know, you contemplate what you're thinking about, it's completely nonsense. Most of the stuff you think about, you know, if you could actually, if I could get sort of a tape recorder and put it to your head and record all the thoughts which you've had in the last hour and play that back, you'd be so embarrassed. Complete nonsense is what we think about. So we're really not using our mind properly. So the meditation which I've been teaching to execs and found it very, very effective is a very gentle sweeping meditation to get you aware of your physical feelings first of all, but not noting them, because I noticed the reason I told this professor in Stanford, the reason that the people you taught meditation to were more stressed out than the people who went to the spa was because you did mindfulness but you missed the important ingredient of kindness. And this is why that when you do any type of mindfulness meditation, please add that magic ingredient of kindness and compassion. It's the kindness and compassion which relaxes you. So the meditation I've been teaching, not doing it yet, I'm just adjusting myself because I'm a bit tight in here. The meditation which I teach for executives, for busy people, is a very quick body sweep. I usually ask them, close your eyes, relax the body, and start with your toes. Ask them, can you feel any sensations in your toes right now? Now, a lot of people are completely oblivious to any feelings in the toes, but when you look, you can actually feel something down there. Any sensation will do. When you're mindful of any sensation, I call that contact. The mind is contacting that part of the body. Once you have a line of communication between your brain and your toe, the next thing to do is to send kindness, metta, compassion along that channel of communication. May my toes be happy and well. You relax your toes. Now, every human being knows the process of bodily relaxation. You feel things opening, expanding, soothing, becoming easy and loose. Tightness, knots, the knots untie, the tightness expands. You feel this wonderful sense of expansive comfort in your toes. You're relaxing a part of the body. And I start from the toes and work up through the feet, through the ankles, through the calves, through the knees, through the thighs, to the bottom. Little by little you can pick up sensations there, but it's not just being mindful, it's being kind to that area of the body. You know why people relax in the spa or when they're being massaged? It's because when you say being massaged, you feel your attention is drawn to that part of the body and someone is being kind to you. They're caring enough to spend some time massaging that part of the body. That is why you relax. You have feeling, softness, kindness, and that relaxes all of those muscles. So as you actually go through the body, from the toes upwards, by the time you get to your bottom, notice the feelings there and just relax them, you actually become quite skilled in knowing how to relax. The mechanism is very well known to explain it, you're mindful of it, and when you're kind to it, wish it well, the feeling changes, it becomes more easy, more comfortable, you know you've relaxed a little bit, you carry on with that type of intention, a very kind, soft intention, and you relax a bit more. Because the mindfulness not only tells you what's going on now, but tells you what changes, you get feedback. And that feedback shows you whether you're going in the correct direction or not. If it is the correct direction, you're getting more ease, more peace, more relaxation. It feels more delightful as the pains disappear. And by the time you've gone through your legs, the legs are not so important as far as your physical health is concerned. And also you don't have many sensations down there. By the time you get to your bottom and you start working up your torso, this is the place where many of the diseases and the tensions and the sicknesses lie. You start working up. You may have trouble with your digestion. And by the time you get to, say, you know, your waist, you can look inside there and you can feel sensations in your colon. Can you feel sensations in your colon now? In the lower part of your digestive tract? Send those feelings kindness, compassion, relax them, expand them, loosen the knots. You soon learn from mindfulness and kindness to relax parts of the body you've hardly ever paid attention to. You can feel tightness, tension, irritations getting less and less and less. One of the biggest problems, one of the problems, diseases people have these days is called irritable bowel syndrome. I don't know if there's anyone here who has irritable bowel syndrome. This is an effective way of helping. Notice that sensation with your mindfulness and just be kind, compassionate towards it. Still remember as a kid, growing up in the poor streets of London, because again my parents weren't wealthy at all, just in a government subsidised apartment, I used to spend most of my day playing soccer in the street. And when you went for a tackle, if you're doing it on the grass, you know, you don't injure yourself. You went for a tackle and you scrape your skin on the sort of the tarmac road. I was always rushing to my mother with my knees grazed and bleeding. You know what my mother would do? She would kiss it better. She would put her lips with all those germs and bacteria on my open wound. I never knew that at the time. And kiss it, and the pain went away, and I rushed off and played soccer again. Never got infected. Why? Simply because my mother was being kind to me. And that's all I really needed, a bit of attention and kindness. The pain disappeared and healing happened. That works. If you have mindfulness and compassion, that's a very powerful combination. So you put it to your irritable bowel, you notice the feelings and just soothe them, expand them, ease them. Mindfulness and metta together. And everything gets so soft. You feel a lot better. And you go right through the body, up through the whole torso. If there's any part of the body you've got a problem with, the kidney, lung, heart, back, stop there and relax it. What you're learning to do with mindfulness and compassion, you're learning how to relax every part of your body. Instead of just saying, "I'll relax," you're relaxing incrementally, stage by stage, and you find you become very skilled in your bodily relaxation. You can relax your arms next, and I actually go to the head last of all. And relax all the muscles in my face. And feel the sensations, just be kind, and every muscle starts to get soft and easy. And last of all, I go to 2 or 3 inches behind my eyes where my brain is. And I don't know whether I'm just imagining the feeling of the brain or it's actually real, but it doesn't matter. I imagine a feeling or pick up a feeling centered around the brain area. And I send my brain compassion. I have to use my brain so much these days. There, poor brain. Take it easy, relax, have a nice time. You actually, and your brain feels nicer. It feels relaxed. You stop thinking and worrying so much because you're relaxing your brain. There, brain, you're okay. Now with that degree of mindfulness and compassion, you learn how to relax your whole body. Now, because you're relaxing your body, you actually feel good. You have a are paid back straight away of physical comfort, less irritation, less aches, less pains. So busy people like that because it does feel better than going to a spa. And also, it's much cheaper. These spas and resorts are very expensive, and you can do much better with just a very simple relaxation technique. And you teach that to busy executives to learn them how to relax their body. But it's not just their body you're relaxing. It's almost like a trick, a skillful means, because when they're relaxing their body, when they're aware of physical feelings and sending compassion and kindness, it's a combination of mindfulness meditation and loving kindness meditation. And they're in the present moment because the feelings are always located in the now. And you know, you don't really plan what feeling you're going to have tomorrow. You may plan where you're going to go to get that feeling, but you don't actually plan, yeah, tomorrow I must remember to sort of be happy. It's in the moment, especially physical feelings. So it centers you in the moment. And it's an interesting and fascinating thing to do, so you don't tend to think so much while you're going through the body. All of the stuff you usually think about is just disappears. So you're actually calming your mind at the same time you're doing this relaxation technique. So usually what happens, as soon as a person finishes sweeping their body and relaxing as they go along, I usually say, okay, now how does your body feel? Oh, it feels so nice. They're enjoying their meditation. Well done, you're getting going. The next thing is just watch your breath. Because they've been watching the feelings of the body, it's very easy to watch the feeling of the breath. It's just another bodily feeling, that's all. But the most important thing, I said, now give your breath kindness and relax it. And they just spent maybe 20 minutes relaxing their body. And it's very easy to use that same mechanism to transfer the same mental intentions which produce relaxation in the body to produce relaxation in the breath. And the breath gets so soft and easy. And you don't want to go anywhere because you're relaxing the breath. And as every doctor will know, if you relax the breath, the mind relaxes as well. And you're starting to emphasize the important part of meditation is bodily and mental relaxation. And that makes it very clear. You're not supposed to be tense and tightening the mind. I've got to watch the breath, or I've got to be, I must be mindful. That's not the way meditation works. You're relaxing, giving ease, comfort, peace, soothing. That's what meditation is. And once you really relax like this, the body's relaxed and you relax the breath, it is so easy to meditate. And people have never meditated before. They get into this and say, wow, this is really nice. I feel so good. Because you need to get some feedback. You need to get something out of meditation. Otherwise, you won't want to do it anymore. And you feel physically good, mentally good. And also, everybody these days is so concerned about their health. They eat all sorts of health foods. In fact, they eat so many health foods, they worry so much about their health, that's what makes them sick. It's not the food they eat, it's the worrying about it. That's what causes them sickness. So those people who are concerned about their health, you know that this little technique, learning how to relax and soothe and ease, that's powerful. It's good for your health. And so people will not begrudge spending time for their health. Even executives go to the gym. They can find time for that. Why? Because it's important for their health. So by emphasizing the health benefits of this type of meditation, you're getting more busy people involved. Because they know that they've got to keep fit and healthy, otherwise they will never be able to carry on their business. If you get sick and have to be in hospital for a couple of weeks, that's very difficult if you're running a business. You can't afford to be sick. Which is why you can learn how to be healthy. It's not just health foods. It's learning how to relax the body and relax the mind. Which is why executives value this type of meditation. They feel it's good for their health. And this has been incredibly popular with people with cancers. Had the Melanoma Foundation not the Mediland, the Breast Cancer Foundation, West Australia, came and I taught them meditation. They loved it. They said, come and get a tape of it. I haven't got the tape yet, but one of these days I'll get around to doing it. I'm a lazy monk, as I said this morning. Because I say, if people with breast cancer used to stop at your breasts, you can feel sensations there. And just relax everything. Send it calmness, kindness. You've gone through the whole body. By the time you get to this point, you should be quite mindful, alert, and able to spend an enormous amount of relaxing energy to that part of the body. And people feel it just soothing and relaxing. Most cancers are the sign of stress. But you're looking at that part of the body where the injury is and de-stressing the whole area. And you do start to feel, oh, that's really nice. It feels good, it feels relaxed. And of course that's having a huge positive impact on the tumour. Shrinking it, easing it, because that's exactly what you've been doing. So when you say these things, people get really interested. I've noticed all the women are really listening now. Because it's frightening, the incidence of breast cancer in our modern world. If you haven't got it yet, you know, you've got a decent chance of getting it. That's why people say, wow, this is important. And that way, we're making the meditation really value. People want to do it because they need to do it. And it's not just helping your physical health. It's actually the trick. It's using physical health in order to turn you onto the path of mental health, of relaxing the mind and relaxing the body. Because it's not that hard. Once you know how to relax the body, you relax the breath, it's not that hard, again, to take the same mechanism and learn how to relax the mind. To soothe it, to ease it. You notice the sensations of mind. You know, the tiredness, the worry, the anxiety. And relax. Send kindness to your own mind. Doesn't matter if you've been thinking stupid thoughts. Doesn't matter if you've been worrying when you're not supposed to. Be kind. And with that kind attention, mindfulness plus compassion, everything relaxes. And you find you've got an amazing technique of meditation. You can call it Anapanasati if you want, mindfulness meditation if you want, insight. You don't care what you call it. It works. And you feel you're getting more and more relaxed. And when you get really relaxed, and you can do relaxation very quickly, when you come out of meditation afterwards, because you've relaxed, you're raring to go. You've got energy, you've got clarity. And so the work which you have to do, you can do it easily. The reason why people get stressed out is because they have to work, but they're not ready to work. You're forcing yourself. You're struggling just to get through. You know, other times, you know, you're really rested, relaxed, and you look at the work and it's easier to do. You're just raring to go. Unfortunately, we get so tired that life becomes a burden. We're just walking up this steep hill and we've got no place to sit down and relax. But you have got a place to relax. If you know how to do this meditation, you value it. But sometimes people say, well, I haven't got time to do this. This one friend I know, he had a beautiful idea. And I really recommend it to everybody who works in an office. He decided to relax every hour on the hour for 1 minute. So when it came on the hour, say, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, he'd be sitting at his desk, he'd close his eyes and meditate for 1 minute. When his boss came past, he said, oh, he must be thinking about the contract. He wasn't at all. He was just watching his breath and being mindful. Because no one knows what you're up to. Your boss can't read your mind. So when you're actually closing your eyes, no one knows what you're up to. So you can meditate without getting into any trouble whatsoever. And so he was meditating, taking a minute off every hour while he was at work. And he didn't mind doing that because he realized by just resting and centering himself every hour on the hour, he knew that that would make his mind relaxed enough so the next 59 minutes of work he could do so well. In fact, the minute he gave to meditation was more than made up by the extra productivity in the next 59. Got an hour and a quarter's work done in 59 minutes because he knew how to relax and energize his mind. And that's why we have to have meditation for busy people. The more busy you are, the more you need to know how to relax. Otherwise, we're going to get this stressed out population. You know, when I gave that talk at this conference in London, you were saying that £200 I charge for a talk. I don't charge £200, but what actually happened? Just before I was about to give my masterclass at this big conference, the organizer came up to me and said, there's a couple of people masquerading as your relations trying to get in for free. I said, my relations aren't, they haven't told me they were coming. I said, I'll go and check them out. And I went outside, you know, accompanied by the organizer. It was my brother and my niece. They never told me they were coming. I could have done something. And I said, no. And I told the organizer, look, I've come all the way from Australia. The least you can do is, you know, let my relations come in, you know, for free. And they said, well, look, we usually only allow one guest per speaker. But, okay, come on. So I got my brother and my niece to come into my talk. And then I told my brother, I said, you know, you almost got me into trouble there, you cheapskate. Can't you afford to sort of pay a few pounds to get in? And that's when he told me, he said, do you know how much they were going to charge just to come into my talk, each person, £200 for 1 hour talk? Now I know my market value. Level of compassion. I was really stunned that people charge £200. How many ringgit is that? 1,400 ringgit for 1 hour. How many hours am I here today? What's it? No, but that's not what we do. But at that particular, after I came back from that talk, I got an email from the British National Health Service. Because they wanted me to go back and teach a masterclass at their annual general conference in Birmingham. That was supposed to be last October, but I couldn't go because it was our arranged retreat time. And I was amazed. The British National Health Service wanted to get a Buddhist monk. You know why? Because people in Britain are so sick, they need a monk to teach them how to be healthy. How to relax. How to be peaceful. And that was the sort of meditation I was teaching them. Just because when you let go of the stress of your busy life, and we're all getting busier and busier and busier, our workload is increasing. No, my workload is increasing. And the only way I cope is my meditation. I relax and enjoy myself. And that's why I do a busy schedule without really worrying about it or getting tense or stressed out. And that's why I am competent to teach busy people, because I'm a busy monk. This is how you do it. And it's good for your health, which is why the British National Health Service said, we want you to come to teach us how to be healthy. Too many busy people. You need to know how to relax. And when you know how to relax quickly, effectively, then your stress levels go way down and you can perform to a much higher level. You become more employable. You are able to take on tasks which other people aren't. And just like my market rate of £200 an hour, you maybe even exceed my market rate in your job. Because you can handle the stress, because you know how to relax when you get tired and keep on going. If you haven't heard this simile before, how heavy is the glass of water? This is an old simile, repeated many times. How heavy is this glass of water? Actually, many of you have got bottles of water. Come on, hold your bottle of water up. How heavy is the bottle of water? Keep it at arm's length. Doesn't matter. You'll notice, do you notice this? The longer you hold it, the heavier it feels. Keep on holding it until it feels quite heavy and your arm starts to ache. The longer you hold it, the heavier it feels. What should you do when it starts to hurt? Put it down. Put it down for a minute. Only a minute. Maybe less than that. Now pick it up again. Does it feel lighter? Exactly. It's the same amount of water. You can put it down now. Because you've rested, it's easier to carry. It actually feels lighter. Now this is actually the busyness, the burdens which you have to do in life. Stress has nothing to do with how much burdens and responsibilities you have. What stress is when it gets heavy, you don't know how to put it down. If you know how to put things down, you can pick it up again, it always feels lighter. Your arm never aches or hurts. I think you've got the message here. If you know how to relax your body and mind, whether it's 1 minute, every hour, or whenever you need it, whenever your brain starts to hurt, when your mind gets tired, you start to get grumpy, put it down, rest for a few minutes. When you pick up that burden again, it will actually feel lighter, be easier to carry. So that's how you do it. And that's how we have meditation for busy people. It's not that hard to do. Especially when you add this wonderful ingredient of kindness to your mindfulness, which gives you happiness. When you have happiness with the mindfulness and kindness, then you like meditating. You want to meditate. It's enjoyable. It's delightful. You feel benefits straight away and think, oh, this is nice. And that's why you will meditate again and again and again. And you have this wonderful thing of peace of mind. And you don't need to be a monk or a nun to get that peace of mind. Anyone can. Right now. By learning how to relax the body. Relax the breath. And relax the mind. Relax to the max. Is my motto. So that, in brief, is how to meditate. For busy people.